The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, it's Monday, so let's get right into it. The top 10 MLB power rankings, and they are completely shaken up this week. We have so much went on this past week in baseball, and the teams that have been playing really well have started to slump a little bit. Teams that have been slumping are starting to get on winning streaks. And we even have a new entry into the top 10, which I didn't really think was going to happen. But since this team is so hot, especially the last month, I had to put them in there. So let's get it started with number one. Ugh. The Los Angeles Dodgers. Ugh. God, can anybody stop this stupid fucking team, for Christ's sake? They are a league best 75-33 right now. So, yeah, the Dodgers are rocking and rolling. They are 9-1 in their last 10 games, and they are currently on an 8-game winning streak. This past week, they swept the San Diego Padres and my San Francisco Giants. So they kicked some ass and just solidified that lead that they've got going on in the NL West right now. Cody Bellinger had a great week. Freddie Freeman just continues to have an amazing season for the Dodgers. He hasn't slowed down from the jump. So Freddie Freeman, he's having a great year. Mookie Betts, he's been having a great season. And then Trey Turner also, he's been having a great season. So yeah, stupid ass Dodgers, number one once again. Because they are just rocking and rolling right now, and they look to be definitely the best team in the league right now. But at number two on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I think it's actually going to make things very interesting come playoff time in the National League, and that would be the New York Mets. They've been solid all season long, and now they have both of their aces back in the lineup. Their overall record right now is 70-39, 8-2 in their last 10 games. They're on a 3-game winning streak. They actually just swept the Braves this weekend, and they played the Nationals earlier in the week. And they really actually have the Braves number this season. I think the Braves have only won like 2-3 games against them this year, and that's their division opponent. So the Mets have been not only been dominating the NL, but they've been dominating the World Series champion Atlanta Braves, who are in their division, and that they definitely have to beat out the Braves every time they play them, just because this division is going to be a battle till the end. And even though the Mets have been the more solid team from the jump, they still got to keep it rolling, and they definitely are going to keep it rolling, especially with the starting pitching. I mean, Max Scherzer, he had another amazing start earlier in the week. But Jacob deGrom, he came back last week, and he made a great start yesterday. He had 12 strikeouts and went six. He went six scoreless innings. I think he was taken out in like the eighth inning, I believe. So regardless, Jacob deGrom, he is back and stronger than ever. So you've got your two aces who are both just pitching lights out currently at this point in time. And so we'll see what happens, because the Mets have some depth too, not only at pitching, but their bullpen's great. They have one of the top closers in the league. And then offensively, they are just killing it. You know, Pete Alonso, he's got 95 RBIs, which is only second to Aaron Judge, who's got 97 RBI on the season right now. And then, you know, Starling Marte, he's just continued to have a great season for them. But then the guy they traded for a couple weeks ago, Daniel Vogelbach, even that fat fuck, this dude, he was trucking around the bases yesterday. He had to just run really quick, and it was hilarious to watch because he's so freaking huge. He looked like the big round rock in the Indiana Jones movies that's rolling at you. That's what he kind of looked like running around the bases. But the Mets right now, they are playing some great baseball, and I think they are definitely going to make things interesting against the Dodgers come playoff time, because at this current point in time, they're probably the only team. The Braves probably could keep up with the Dodgers. But the Mets, if they're able to stay healthy, they have probably, compared to both teams, they probably have the better starting pitching, just because Scherzer and DeGrom are two of the best pitchers in the league, especially Scherzer. So we'll see what happens. But the Mets are number 2 this week on my top 10. Then my top 10 MLB power rankings at number 3, I have the St. Louis Cardinals, who have shot up this week. Their overall record is 60-48. They're 9-1 in their last 10 games, and they are currently on a 7-game winning streak. This past week, they just played the New York Yankees, who they swept this weekend. And not only did they sweep them, they dominated them this weekend. Then they also played the Chicago Cubs earlier in the week. Nolan Arenado, he's had a great week. Then Paul DeJong, he had some huge hits against the Yankees this weekend, especially yesterday. And then Paul Goldschmidt, he currently leads the league at batting average with a .332. And the Cardinals, man, they've just been a silent killer this year. Nobody's really been talking about them, other than me. I've been recognizing what they're doing. I wouldn't say they're necessarily a World Series contender, but I definitely expect them to keep shaking things up throughout the regular season. And we'll see what happens come playoff time. They're usually a second half team. And once they hit the postseason, the Cardinals usually become very unstoppable, and they are an upset special team. So you really don't want to see the Cardinals at this time of year, and they are on fire right now. Then at number 4 on my top 10 MLB power rankings at the Philadelphia Phillies, overall record of 60-48. They're also 9-1 in their last 10 games, and they are currently on a 5-game winning streak. They just swept the Washington Nationals this weekend. They also played the Braves earlier in the week, and they played the Braves really well also. I think they took 2 of 3 in that series. And the Phillies, you know, they've just been getting hotter and hotter as the season has gone on. So this could be a huge second-half team to watch out for. Kyle Schwarber, he's still having an amazing year. He leads the NL with 34 home runs. Then you've got Aaron Nola, who came out and pitched a spectacular game the other day. And then this player who's I've never heard of up until this past week, Nick Maton, he's had basically a hit, a run, or a home run in every single game this week, and has been a huge factor for the Phillies and why they are on fire right now. Then at number 5 on my top 10 MLB power rankings at the Houston Astros, overall record of 70-40. They've actually cooled it down the last week and a half here. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Cleveland Guardians and the Boston Red Sox. And let me tell you, man, the Guardians actually played them really freaking well yesterday. Actually, this whole weekend, they played them really well. But the trade they did make at the trade deadline for Trey Mancini, that has really worked out well, because, you know, he came up to bat and his first at-bat hit a home run. Then the following game, he came up to bat, hit a grand slam, and then he also had another home run. So he had 3 home runs in his first couple of games for the Astros. So he's definitely panning out to be a perfect trade that the Astros made in the middle of the season. Then you've got Jose Altuve, who still is having a spectacular year. And then Justin Verlander, man, I already talked about him earlier in the week on Friday's show. And he leads the league in wins, and he leads the league in the lowest ERA as well. So Justin Verlander, you really got to watch out for this dude, because come postseason especially, he is a killer, and he's killing right now. All right, and then at number 6 on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the New York Yankees, 70-39 is their overall record, and they're slumping right now. They're 4-6 in their last 10 games, and they're actually on a 5-game losing streak. They got swept by the Cardinals, as I mentioned a little bit ago. Then they also played the Mariners, who actually played them really well as well. The Yankees, while I still think they're one of the best teams in the league, I still think they're definitely a World Series contender. But they are slumping right now, and they really need to get out of this slump. This is probably the worst baseball they've played so far. And it is August, so it's still early, and they still should win their division because they have such a huge lead in the division. So I'm not really worried about them making the postseason. I still think they're a very solid team. But this is not a good slump for them right now. Aaron Judge, though, he continues to have a great season, even though the Yankees have had a pretty bad couple of weeks here. Aaron Judge, he still leads the league a hefty lead in home runs with 43 home runs. And then, like I said, Kyle Schwarber's right behind him with 34 home runs. So Aaron Judge's got a solid lead in the home run department, and then he leads the league in RBI as well with 97 RBI. So Aaron Judge, he's having an MVP caliber season, and he definitely is not the reason why they've been slumping. As a matter of fact, he's the reason why they've been able to stay in the games, even though they've lost them. But I expect the Yankees to bounce back here probably this week. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB power rankings at the Toronto Blue Jays, overall record of 60-48, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week they played the Minnesota Twins and the Tampa Bay Rays. Vlad Guerrero Jr., he currently has an 18-game hitting streak, and he just has had one hell of a week. I mean, he's been having one hell of a season, but he really had one hell of a week as well. Bo Bichette, he also had a great week. And then Kevin Gausman, he's had a down couple of last starts, but he finally had a solid outing in his last start for the Blue Jays. Then at number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, the Atlanta Braves, overall record of 64-46, 5-5 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the New York Mets and the Philadelphia Phillies, and they did not play them very well. The Braves had a down week, just kind of like the Yankees and Astros did. It's expected. When you have such a long season in baseball, even when you're the best team in the league, it's expected that you're going to have a down couple of weeks and maybe a down month. It doesn't affect you if you're able to overcome that. So I still believe in the Braves. Max Fried, he had a great outing earlier in the week. Ronald Acuna Jr., he had a great week. So the Braves still continue to have a good season, but you definitely don't want to fall behind and lose to your division opponents either. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Cleveland Guardians, overall record of 56-52, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Houston Astros and the Arizona Diamondbacks. And, Jose Ramirez, he continues to have a great season, but he's also having a great season defensively, not just offensively. That's where you're really seeing him becoming a huge factor is obviously with his bat, but defensively he's made some really big plays, especially against the Astros this past weekend. Then Jose Rosario, he also made some huge defensive plays. But then they also have this young pitcher, Tristan McKenzie, who's had a couple of great outings this season. And in his last start, he had 8 strikeouts. And so he's been having a phenomenal season, and he looks to be maybe the next up and coming starting pitcher in the league. And then routing out my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Baltimore Orioles. I did not expect to see them in my top 10, but they are the hottest team in the league this past month. Overall record right now is 56-52, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Texas Rangers. And, when I look at their roster, they don't have a lot of guys who I'm even familiar with. I did read about their shortstop, Jorge Mateo, who this week he's been really the reason why they've won so many games. He's made some huge plays defensively, but he's also made some huge plays with his bat as well. So the Orioles, while I wouldn't call them a World Series contender, they could be a team who fucks with your season. They could be a team who fucks up somebody's, last little run to maybe make the playoffs. They could fuck up a last, a little last run if they happen to make the playoffs. Maybe they'll be one of those upset teams who upsets, the first team they end up playing. But you really got to watch out for Baltimore because they're winning in different ways as well. Their starting pitching it is is really solid. But also offensively and defensively, they're getting it done. So you got to give it up to the Orioles. And I decided to put them in my top 10 this week. All right, so let's move on to the NFL. We had a little bit of news this weekend with the NFL, starting with we had some Hall of Fame inductees on Saturday night. Tony Boselli, the offensive lineman for the Jacksonville Jaguars, he is the first Jacksonville Jaguar to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Then you had Cliff Branch, the wide receiver of the Raiders, Leroy Butler, the defensive back of the Green Bay Packers, Sam Mills, linebacker of the Carolina Panthers, Richard Seymour, defensive lineman, the New England Patriots, Bryant Young, defensive lineman of the San Francisco 49ers, and then, of course, Dick Vermeil, coach, most notably for the St. Louis Rams when they were the greatest show on turf. So, great class right there. All of them well-deserved Hall of Fame, definitely Hall of Fame-worthy careers on all of them. And looking ahead to next year's first round of nominees in 2023, a couple notables here. We have offensive lineman Joe Thomas for the Cleveland Browns. I kind of feel like he's a shoe-in for a first selection in his first year of eligibility for the Hall of Fame, just because even though he played for the Cleveland Browns, he is by far one of the most reliable offensive linemen of all time. He played every game of his career, I believe, for the first, 10 years or something. Like, his record is insane. He played, something like 120 straight games or something. I can't recall. Regardless, he was a powerhouse offensive lineman. And definitely Hall of Fame worthy career. Then you also have James Harrison, the linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers. One thing that I've always loved about James Harrison is not only is he a badass on the field, but he was pretty much doubted. He was an undrafted free agent, and he just worked really hard for his entire career. And he ended up, he made one of the most memorable Super Bowl plays of all time, where he, when it was the Steelers versus the Arizona Cardinals, Cardinals were about to score, and right at the goal line, Kurt Warner threw an interception right to James Harrison. James Harrison trucks it on back, runs it all the way back 99 yards for a touchdown right before halftime. So that's one of the most memorable plays in Super Bowl history for sure. But even beyond that one play, he is one of the I enjoyed the dude's career. So I definitely think he's Hall of Fame worthy. Don't know if he's a first ballot first year of eligibility type guy who gets in on his first try, but I think he's definitely Hall of Fame worthy for sure. Then you also have Dwight Freeney, who's going to be eligible next year, first time for the Hall of Fame. He most notably played for the Indianapolis Colts. In his time, especially the 5 years he really had where he really dominated the league, he was the dude. So Dwight Freeney, I don't know if he's going to be a first balloter either, just because, DeMarcus Ware, he was eligible for the first time this year in 2022. And I kind of think Dwight Freeney and DeMarcus Ware are kind of on the same level, in my opinion. I think they're both great players. And they were both beasts at their position. So I kind of feel like since DeMarcus didn't get in on his first year, Freeney may not get in on his first year, but I also wouldn't be shocked if he did because he was a dominating force. And then the last notable player eligible for next year for the first time for next year's Hall of Fame is Darrelle Revis, the cornerback most notably for the New York Jets. He also played for the Patriots as well, won a Super Bowl with them. But he was one of the most dominating cornerbacks of his time as well. So don't know if he's first ballot worthy year eligible worthy of getting in there. But definitely all four of those players, I think, are great players. They had great careers and definitely all worthy of making the Hall of Fame. So we'll see what happens when we get closer to the end of the year with the Hall of Fame. Then we've also got preseason games. All the preseason games begin this week, starting on Thursday, running through Sunday. We will have preseason games, 3 weeks of preseason, and then we get real live football. So, can't fucking wait. We did, get some news that, this year the refs have been advised to pay more attention to illegal contact penalties. Now, let me tell you, I hate a lot of the rules, of course, in football, because a lot of them, especially these days, are very ticky-tack, and they really tamper down the defense, and it sucks, like, how difficult they've made it for defenders to actually play defense. And one of my least favorite penalties is the illegal contact penalty. And if you don't know what the illegal contact penalty is, it's, you can't touch the player, past 5 yards. And I've always hated that rule just because when I'm watching old school highlights of, let's say Deion Sanders versus Jerry Rice, or hell, even Deion Sanders versus Michael Irvin, all those great players back in the day, you would see them just bouncing off each other and just absolutely battling it out all the way down the field. And it just made the game so much more interesting. But, of course, you know, so look out for this year. There's always, every single year in football, there are penalties that we all hate. And it becomes the main topic. And I kind of have a feeling this year, illegal contact is something we're going to be discussing a lot this year, and not in a good way, meaning there's probably going to be some really ticky-tack and really stupid calls. But unfortunately, that's just the way it is. But if you happen to see any more illegal contact penalties more than usual, that's because they were warned to look out for more illegal contact penalties. All right, and then so on Friday's show, I went over the NFL GOATs on defense, and now today's show, I'm going to do the NFL GOATs on offense at each position. Like I said, on Friday's show, ESPN had released their all-time GOATs at every single position in football, and so I thought it would be interesting to see if compare notes and see if I came up with the same GOATs that they did. Defense, I had a few differences, but offensively, I'd say I'm mostly in line with ESPN. So let's get it started with quarterback. ESPN, of course, their GOAT is Tom Brady, and mine, of course, is also Tom Brady. It's basically inarguable. He is the greatest quarterback of all time. He played for the New England Patriots from 2000 to 2019, and he currently plays for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, also known as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's been selected to 15 Pro Bowls. His career stats currently are 318 games, 84,520 passing yards, 624 passing yards, 203 interceptions. And he is the only NFL QB with more than 200 career wins. He has 243 more wins than four current NFL franchises. The Ravens have 233 wins. The Panthers have 205. The Jaguars have 180, and the Texans have 139. So, yeah, and I mean, really, there are way too many records and way too long of a resume to name off what Tom Brady's done. I've already done it actually quite a few times on this show, so I'm going to kind of limit all the statistics on him, because we get it. He's got most Super Bowls, blah, 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 owns about every single record. So, it was very easy to put Tom Brady as the GOAT at quarterback. Runner-up, of course, was Joe Montana, because prior to Tom Brady getting more Super Bowls than Joe Montana, I'd say the overall consensus is most people felt that Joe Montana was the greatest quarterback of all time, including myself. So he's definitely runner-up. I mean, four Super Bowls, can't argue with that. And he used to be the Tom Brady before Tom Brady hit the league. By the way, Tom Brady looked up to Joe Montana, so there you go. We wouldn't even have a Tom Brady if it wasn't for Joe Montana. All right, then running back, ESPN's GOAT is Jim Brown. And I agree with them. Mine is also Jim Brown. Jim Brown's career was with the Cleveland Browns from 1957 to 1965. He was enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1971. He was selected to 9 Pro Bowls. His career stats are 118 games, 2,359 carries, 12,312 rushing yards, 106 rushing touchdowns, and 20 receiving TDs. Brown led the NFL in rushing yards in 8 of his 9 seasons in the league. No other running back in NFL history has led the league in rushing more than four times. And also Jim Brown's just another dude who owns so many records. And if he doesn't currently own them, he did own them at one point. He was one of the most dominating rushers at his time. It's actually really unfathomable when you read about his career. He averaged 100 yards per game. Like, every game, he averaged 100 yards. Like, that's insane. So, I mean, in my opinion, to me, Jim Brown's probably, probably the greatest football player of all time, not just, like, at running back, but if you're ranking all of the football players just and you're not separating them by position, Jim Brown probably is number one. He's definitely top five, but maybe one of these days I'm sure I'll break that down at some point, but you could definitely make a case for Jim Brown being the greatest football player of all time, not just greatest running back of all time. And then at runner-up, I put Walter Payton as the runner-up for GOAT running back, just because he was one of the most dominating running backs when he hit the league. Just the type of style, the way he ran, he just was a very electric running back, and I kind of feel like he was very, I don't really think anybody's duplicated his type of style of running since he hit the league. So Walter Payton is my runner-up. Then at wide receiver, ESPN's GOAT is Jerry Rice. And once again, I am in agreement with them, with Jerry Rice. His career was with the San Francisco 49ers from 1985 to 2000. Then with the Oakland Raiders from 2001 to 2004, and then ended his career in Seattle in 2004. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2010. He was selected to 13 Pro Bowls. His career stats are 303 games, 1,549 receptions, 22,895 receiving yards, 197 receiving touchdowns, and 10 rushing touchdowns. And he is one of two receivers to win the receiving triple crown, which is you lead the NFL in catches, yards, and touchdowns. And actually the only other player to do that was Cooper Kupp, who just did it this year. He also won Offensive Player of the Year and Super Bowl MVP in his career. Cooper Kupp is the only other wide receiver to do the receiving triple crown, and so that says a lot, because it hasn't happened since Jerry Rice did it. And obviously, I really don't. Jerry Rice is another player who I would definitely put in my top five of greatest of all time, just overall football players. Really, nobody played the game like him, and it really wasn't even close when I was looking over receivers. I almost didn't put a runner-up because I don't even think the runner-up comes close to what Jerry Rice did. But I felt like that would be too arrogant, I guess. But my runner-up is Randy Moss. He was a spectacular receiver. I mean, really, if he just ran down the field, you really couldn't catch him. Just toss the ball up to him, and he would kill it. Just the difference, though, between the two of them is Jerry Rice's work ethic was second to none. And Randy Moss, he had his off games. If he wasn't feeling in the mood, he wasn't feeling in the mood. Whereas Jerry Rice was never like that, ever. Even when he played with the Seattle Seahawks. I remember that season, because it was a very mediocre season for Jerry Rice, and it was just really weird to see him in the Seattle Seahawks uniform. Even then, you could see that he was trying, even though you could see him petering out as the season would go on. So it was very, very easy for me to pick the GOAT at wide receiver. Then at tight end, ESPN went with Rob Gronkowski. And once again, I agree with ESPN on Rob Gronkowski as the greatest tight end of all time. He played with the New England Patriots from 2010 to 2018, then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers from 2020 to 2021. He had five Pro Bowl selections. His career stats are 143 games, 621 receptions, 9,286 receiving yards, and 92 receiving touchdowns. He also had three seasons with at least 1,000 receiving yards and 10 touchdown catches, which is the most among tight ends of all time. He really was unstoppable. I mean, when you got Rob Gronkowski out in the middle of the field, and if you just did that seam pass – that he and Brady just were known for. I mean, game over. I don't know what the percentage is on that that pass between the two of them, but I bet you the completion percentage on that seam pass from Brady to Gronkowski is probably in the 80% range, maybe even higher than that, just because it seems to work for them every single time. His size and his speed and just his skill really made him such a versatile tight end. He really stands out above all, because it was difficult to choose actually a runner up, because there were a lot of great tight ends throughout the history of the league. But my runner up, actually, I don't think a lot of people would talk about him, just because he retired quite some time ago. But my runner up at tight end for GOAT is Shannon Sharp. I really enjoyed his career a lot. And I think a lot of people would lean more towards Tony Gonzalez, who was another great tight end. Antonio Gates was another one who I was kind of wavering on as well. But Shannon Sharp, man, he kind of like changed the tight end position, because the tight end position really was like, he was more of a blocker and he would catch passes every once in a while. Shannon Sharp made tight end like an athletic position where you're like, oh shit, that's a real weapon on the field. So my runner up at the tight end GOAT is Shannon Sharp, and I don't think a lot of people would go with that. All right, and then offensive tackle GOAT. ESPN went with Anthony Munoz, which was difficult for me to argue against, but I did go with somebody else. I went with Orlando Pace. His career was with the St. Louis Rams from 1997 to 2008, and then he rounded out his career with the Chicago Bears in 2009. He was selected to 7 Pro Bowls. His career stats are 197 games. And the thing about him is, the reason why I made him the GOAT is just because he really was a part of a great team. And, it's like, He blocked for some of the greatest players of all time who, like, ended up winning MVP awards. They won Super Bowls. They went to Super Bowls. They were one of the best teams in the league for those few years. And he just was a solid workhorse. He blocked with the most gross yardage, second highest completion percentage, and fifth most touchdown passes during his 12 years with the St. Louis Rams. Under his protection, the Rams passing offense compiled more than 3,000 yards in all of his seasons. 7 different quarterbacks eclipsed 3,000 yards in a season, and 7 players rushed for 1,000 yards with Orlando Pace blocking. He also protected MVP recipient for 3 years in a row, Kurt Warner, and then also in 2000 when Marshall Faulk won. So he's blocked for some great players. I think he was one of the most consistent offensive tackles of all time. My runner-up is Anthony Munoz, because he's very consistent as well. It's very difficult to argue against him. But for me, I've always really respected Orlando Pace, and so I had to put him as my offensive tackle GOAT. Then at offensive guard, ESPN went with Larry Allen, and I also went with Larry Allen because, A, he's a motherfucking Dallas Cowboy. B, he is a badass. He was one of, if you watched the Cowboys of the 90s, you know Larry Allen was that dude. He was the leader of that offensive line. He was the leader of blocking for these motherfuckers. And I just really enjoyed his career. He played for the Cowboys from 1994 to 2005. Then he played for the 49ers from 2006 to 2007. He was inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2013. He'd been selected to 11 Pro Bowls. His career stats are 203 games, 197 starts. He was part of the offensive line that helped Emmitt Smith rush for Cowboys' single-season record of 1,773 rushing yards in 95, which was actually topped by DeMarco Murray in 2014. He had 1,845, but I mean that record lasted a long ass time. And really at offensive guard, it really wasn't close. My runner up was Gene Upshaw, who was the offensive guard for the great Steelers, the great Raiders of the 70s, and he was a very outstanding offensive guard, but I don't think he touched what Larry Allen did. Then at center, ESPN went with Mike Webster as their go, and I agree with them at that. His career was with Pittsburgh Steelers from 1974 to 1988, then the Kansas City Chiefs from 1989 to 1990. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1997. He went to 9 Pro Bowls. His career stats are 245 games and 217 starts. And he was a first-team All-Pro 5 times over 6 seasons from 1978 to 1983. And he really just, still to this day, is one of the most dominating centers of all time. So it was really difficult to even, because there really wasn't even anybody, a runner-up for me to even really, I put a runner-up, but I really put the runner-up because he's the only two-way player, one of the only two-way players in the league, and that would be Chuck Bednarik, played for the Eagles, he played center and linebacker, and that's really the only reason why I put him on here. It's just because he played two positions on offense and defense, and that's absolutely unheard of these days, and he was dominant at both of them, so definitely had to put him on there. All right, and then at kicker, ESPN went with Adam Vinatieri. And gotta say, I agree with them because really, nobody's been more clutch than Adam Vinatieri. He's not only been clutch in the regular season, but he's been clutch in the postseason, and he's been clutch in all of the Super Bowls he's been in. He's been clutch in the snow, he's been clutch in the rain, he's been clutch in the wind. As a matter of fact, I mean, one of the most memorable plays of all time was between the tuck rule with the New England Patriots and the Oakland Raiders when it looked like Tom Brady fumbled the ball and the Raiders would have picked up the fumble and it would have gone on to win the game. They unfortunately did not. And I mean, it was a snowstorm. I mean, there was feet of snow on the ground. And Adam Vinatieri comes right out and kicks the game-winning field goal and sends the Patriots on to the Super Bowl, and he would eventually win the Super Bowl for them. So nobody has been more consistent than Adam Vinatieri. He played for the Patriots from 1996 to 2005. Then he played for the Indianapolis Colts from 2006 to 2019. So he went to 3 Pro Bowls. He played in 365 games. His field goal percentage is 83.8%. He's made 599 field goals of 715. Extra points, percentage is 97.3%. He's made 874 of 898 extra points. And Vinatieri is also the NFL's all-time leader in career points with 2,673 points. So it's really inarguable that Adam Vinatieri is the greatest kicker of all time, just because, like I said, he proved it every time the Patriots needed him. He stepped right up. He would make the field goals. It didn't matter what the pressure was. Didn't matter what the weather was. Didn't matter what the excuses were. Didn't matter. He came right up and he did his job. At runner up, I put Justin Tucker of the Baltimore Ravens, which he just got a brand new contract extension today. He is the highest paid kicker in the league. So good for him because he's definitely worthy of it. But I still think it's going to be very difficult for him to surpass what Adam Vinatieri did during his reign of terror. And then rounding out the offensive goats, return special teams. ESPN voted Devin Hester as their goat, and I agree with them. It was difficult for me to not go with Deion Sanders because Deion Sanders, he's actually my runner-up. Just going to spoil that right now. But Devin Hester is literally the most electric kick returner of all time. I mean, you just knew. If you kicked to him, there was probably a like 80% chance he's running that shit back. I mean, he started off a Super Bowl with a kick return for a touchdown against the Colts. I don't know what the Colts were thinking by kicking to him on the first play of the game, and he came right out the gate and had them sweating balls. The Colts would ultimately go on to win that Super Bowl, but Devin Hester really made shit uncomfortable for the Colts right from the start. Devin Hester's career. He was with the Chicago Bears from 2006 to 2013, then with the Atlanta Falcons from 2014 to 2015, then the Baltimore Ravens in 2016, and the Seattle Seahawks in 2016. He went to four Pro Bowls. He played in 156 games. He had 14 punt returns for touchdowns, 5 kickoff returns for touchdowns, 16 receiving touchdowns, and 255 receptions. So, I mean, right there, that's really difficult to say anybody is better than him when it comes to special teams being return specialists. He is also the NFL's all-time leader in punt return touchdowns with 14 and non-offensive touchdowns with 20. So, like I said, it was difficult to not put Deion Sanders on there because Deion Sanders was also just as electric. You kind of knew if you're going to kick that ball to Deion Sanders, you better make sure your defenders are ready to go after him because he is going to light you on fire, and if you can't catch him, he's gone. And that's the way it was with Devin Hester his entire career. And even at the end, there were some plays he made that were a bit huge. But yeah, Devin Hester, I think, definitely is the GOAT as the return team specialist. All right, and then also today we had the first college football coaches poll released. The preseason poll was released. This is not an official AP poll, but there really aren't any surprises in my opinion. Number one is Alabama. Duh. That nothing else needs to be said there because they are the best team in the league or in college football. And until somebody dethrones them, like they are not the national champions, of course, but still, come on. They're obviously number one. Then at number two, they voted for Ohio State. I don't know how I feel about that just because Ohio State, they're a good team, but they always disappoint. So we'll see what happens with Ohio State. Not saying they're a bad team, just saying they just always tend to disappoint. And it's not shocking that they're putting the preseason coaches poll right now. Then at number three, you have Georgia, the defending champions. So they should absolutely be in the top five for sure. Then at number four, you have Clemson. And then at number five, you have Notre Dame. So I think all five of those teams, definitely good teams. Like I said, Ohio State's really the only one I'm kind of questioning. Notre Dame, I'm questioning a little bit too, just because they've got a new coach. But, you know, same system, same player. So they might still be dominant like last year. But that's the top five. My Texas Longhorns come in at number 18, and they actually got a vote for one first place vote. Somebody actually believed in them, so to be ranked first. So somebody's got faith in the Longhorns now. I definitely expect them to have a decent season, definitely better than last year. Last year was an absolutely atrocious season. Hopefully Quinn Ewers, he's able to shine. They haven't really announced who the starting quarterback's going to be, but I think it's going to be Ewers. I think it should be Ewers just because, he was the top-ranked recruit when we got him, and I kind of feel like he's too good to be sitting on the bench. But, hey, I don't make those decisions, and you just never know what's happening in practice. But, hey, I'm happy to see that not only did they get a one person to vote for them, but, hey, they're ranked 18th, and I think that's a good spot for them because I do think they're going to be a competitive football team this year. I'm not going to even consider them for, like, national championship level or even college football playoff at this point, but I think they're going to definitely improve. And hopefully next year is going to be more a year where you look at the Longhorns and go, that's going to be a really good team. But, hey, who knows what's going to happen this year. I just hope they're better than last year because last year was a shit show. All right, and then rounding out today's show, earlier today news broke that Kevin Durant has given the Nets an ultimatum. He has told them it's either you choose him or you choose Steve Nash and the GM. So apparently that's where Kevin Durant's problem lies with Steve Nash and the GM. Apparently, actually, he's upset that they went with Steve Nash over Ime Udoka, who is now the coach of the Boston Celtics. But they did interview Udoka back during their coaching search a couple years ago when they ultimately ended up going with Steve Nash. Now, it was kind of funny because when Steve Nash was hired, it was really hilarious to see Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving discuss how they don't call Steve Nash coach. They just refer to him as Steve, and they basically treated him like he was one of the homies. And so I'm not really shocked that this is where we're at, because if you don't show respect to your superior, then why would you have respect for him as a coach? I mean, you don't call him coach, so why would you respect him as a coach? They looked at him as a friend. And so that's it's kind of amusing right there. I was never really actually sold on Steve Nash being a coach, just because I felt like he didn't get enough experience as a bench coach. That's usually how it works, is usually, don't get me wrong, Steve Nash had an amazing NBA career. He won multiple MVPs. He dominated the league. So he knows his way around a basketball court for sure. He knows how things are put together. And I wouldn't say has no shot at ever being a coach again. But I remember when they hired him, I was very, very shocked by the hiring, just because I'm like, well, he hasn't even been a bench coach. He hasn't done anything coaching-wise, so this kind of seems odd. And I think they were just mostly banking on the fact that they signed Kevin Durant, they had Kyrie Irving, then they ended up trading for James Harden, so they were thinking, like, oh, we got all these superstars, and that's what's going to carry us, when it's like, no, you do, there's a coach there for a reason. There's a whole squad full of coaches for a reason. You don't just have bench coaches and a coach just to stand there and look cute. No, they're there to coach. And so that's probably why this team was never able to gel, because Steve Nash has never been put in the position to coach guys before. So he didn't really know how to handle all these personalities. He knows how to handle it as a player, but he does not know how to handle it as a coach. And as a coach, it's a completely different ballgame than when you're a player, for many different reasons. So this is just very interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see what the Nets end up doing, because really they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't, because I feel like you have to stick with Kevin Durant. He is a great basketball player, and I feel like they're probably going to get rid of Kyrie Irving if there's a market for him, which is tough to tell if there even is a market for him, really. But it seems like they want to keep Kevin Durant. And if I'm them, I would want to keep Kevin Durant as well. And like I said, Steve Nash, what the hell has he proven? He hasn't proven shit. So I don't see a problem with firing him. I just think it's kind of funny that Kevin Durant's giving this ultimatum when he's the one who picked this position to be in. I mean, he could be sitting pretty with Golden State, for Christ's sake. And with the team that actually has level-headed players like Steph Curry, and a great coach in Steve Kerr, and a well-run organization with a great GM, great president, and great owner, all the way from the top all the way on down. So he's the one who made this decision to go to Brooklyn. And, you know, I know he doesn't pick the coach. They might have asked him his feelings on the coach, It's just kind of an amusing situation that the Nets are in right now, because everybody had such high hopes for them at the beginning of all this, and now it's really crashing and burning really fucking bad, and it just got even worse with the Kevin Durant ultimatum today. So we'll see what develops with the Brooklyn Nets. You know, like I said, we've got NFL preseason football kicking off on Thursday and running all the way through the weekend, and so we're going to have three straight weeks of preseason football. Preseason just meh, whatever, but hey, football is football. Then we'll have college football kicking off in a couple of weeks here. Well, we've got we got more like a month until college football kicks off. I'm going to say like more like 3.5 weeks, but so that's right around the corner, and then just, you know, baseball is heating up and getting crazy, so we're going to see what's going on with sports here. So yeah, enjoy the week of sports, and I will talk to you guys on Friday.